Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter. Well, you know, when the day destroys the night, the night destroys the day, try to run, try to hide, break on through the other side. Break on through, break it, god dang. Well, he's got this damn song stuck in my head. I know, Andy, don't sing. I got one of the worst singing voices there. Really. That's why they told me to play a sax instead. But today, I have a very, very special day. Because I have a very special guest. Of course, every day is a very special day. And I want to thank you all for listening to my show. And, of course, I'm Andrew Fetter, your host, When Pigs Fly. And speaking of which, I will like to inform you at the bottom of my show, at the very end, you're going to hear the song Shooting Stars, which you've heard from my last show, by Ruby Freeman and Orchestra. I'll let you all folks know, she will be playing in a special engagement at the Echo, that's the club, the Echo, that's not in the phone, in Los Angeles at 9 p.m. Monday, September 14th. And, of course, the Echo was where Sunset meets Glendale at 1822 Sunset Boulevard. And she is going to be on my future show on October 9th, and talking and thinking about other future shows I have. I have opportunity and I'm thankful to have Carrie Feza, who is an astrologist. You've probably heard her on several of my past shows. And she, of course, was one who came with astrology and quite surprisingly predicted the outcome of the elections and the demeanors and the scandal with John Edwards and so on and so on. So she's going to be on my show on October 2nd to tell us what is in the stars and the cosmic forces for the coming year. And Siobhan O'Connor, who is an esteemed healer and clairvoyant who has helped well over 7,500 souls, she will be on my show on September 25th. So do love to hear you guys. Check those shows out. And also, please do check out my past shows on past archives, whether they be rants or interviews. And if you got any questions or comments or things on your minds, please do feel free to contact me at flyingpigs@artlover.com. Or you can always contact me at MySpace. If you have myspaceaccounts.com/AndrewFetter, I do always love to listen to your comments or questions. Sometimes I do shows, particularly based upon what you request. So do indeed give me a holler. Also, let you inform you, I will be in Las Vegas doing a signing event for my latest book, The Heretic. That I will be doing in Vegas, signing events on October 17th at the Borders Bookstore in Town Square Mall. That's on the Strip at 6521 South Las Vegas Boulevard. Again, that's October 17th at 1 p.m. That's a Saturday. And then the following week, I will be still in Las Vegas for that week at Barnes Noble in the Summerlin. That's October 24th, Saturday. That's the 7-Eleven area of Las Vegas in the Crossroads Mall. That's 8915 West Charleston. And I know people have been asking me about my next book, and which is called Spirit. And I will keep you well informed when it does come out. So, but we anticipate it coming, being released in January. Now, you know, it's sort of weird. When I do shows, it's sort of funny. I think about a show that's coming up and what it's going to be about, and everybody knows about today being 9/11. And I was actually going to be doing a show about talking about the issues of, you know, tragic situations. And I believe that the time, there's always perfect timing, and the universe is in indeed a perfect situation. You know, being of a 10, as they say in Kabbalism. And it's sort of unusual that 9/11, which today's show I was going to be dealing with, that I'm going to have a very special guest in dealing with those very issues. You know, and when dealing with the tragedy of what happened in 9/11, I do believe in my own heart that, you know, in all events, which they are indeed a karmic tragedy in itself, but it still comes to placing, which, like in my today's show, is still you, one would have to deal with the loss of the loved ones that are in course of what has happened. You can't just be callous and not have feelings. People do have feelings, and no matter how you try to push them down, it is part of your matrix. And it must be dealt with in its source, with its issues and its understandings. Now, in all events, like I said, which they'll be quite karmic in their nature, these are very opportunities. The opportunities, the windows of opportunities to heal and to grow from. Now, some of the most tragic events is when we lose the ones we love. You know, whether they be a dear friend, a lover, a spouse, a sibling, a parent, a grandparent, or a child. It is indeed, though, through our higher vision, is just indeed just part of life. Yet, like I had, it is a reality that we are yet in our matrix, our emotional spirits, our souls, our feelings are part of our soul and spirit. And these emotions and feelings must be accepted upon and through them healed upon in a very positive form. And everyone has or knows someone who has indeed lost someone that has passed away in whatever form, whether it be by accident, illness, or violence, or any other measure. The hearts of the survivors are the ones who are most affected, not the ones who have departed and crossed over. And it takes a healing force to heal the heart of the hurt, while developing their self-worth and their self-love. Now, my special guest is one who has placed all her endeavors and ability to do such that, to heal the hearts of the grieved. Her organization, the ACY Foundation, has opened windows to healing the hearts of thousands upon thousands of children and families grieving their loss of a loved one by offering a safe environment in which to grow and heal through, whether it be by peer groups, support groups, art therapy, or education and guidance. They have been supporting survivors on both sides of these tragic events by achieving an inner peace through forgiveness and love. And yet, her foundation is quite unique in that it encourages the forgiveness healing between victim families and those of the offenders. You know, each year millions upon millions of young children lose a parent, sibling, or close family member. And these losses may suddenly and unexpectedly be, in such cases, an automobile accident or crash, or other accidents, or natural disasters, or violent crime, or maybe just from resulting of a prolonged illness or sudden illness. In a sense, even a child of divorced parents may suffer, experience trauma when they lose a sibling or parent due to this family-style split. The ACY Foundation supports those in their suffering with a unique love and guidance. And with all due respect and much appreciation for coming on my show, I feel honored to have the founder of the ACY Foundation. She is a healer and intuitive as well, Mary Elizabeth Yoder. How are you doing?
Well, good morning. Good morning. I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, a lot of my listeners out there, they, you know, first they gather, they know, they read, and then they understand what your foundation is about, but then a lot of people want to know, well, who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah, well, so could you tell me a little bit, or tell my audience a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. Well, I was born at a very young age.
usually it starts out that when
yes.
You're a baby.
Once upon a time, a long time ago. Well, I was born to a loving family, and my mother and father. I was born into Amish heritage. My mom was Amish. My father was Mennonite, and that's actually where they met in the Mennonite church once my mother's family had went into the Mennonites. So I grew up in Indiana, and, you know, we went to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. Anytime the church doors were open, we were in church. So, you know, I grew up with a very family, God-oriented home environment. And at 11 years old, we were coming home from church on a Wednesday evening, and that's when we were hit by a drunk driver. I was in the car with five of us siblings. I have five brothers all together and one sister, so there's two of us girls. We had a big family, and my mom was in the car. My father passed away within a two-hour period, and we were all, you know, put into the hospital. And life as we knew it completely altered. And, you know, I heard you talking about, I mean, it is 9/11, right? I mean, then this was like a major catastrophe in our lives. And the whole community, it really rocked the whole community. And that time period for me, it's really hard to put it into words what one goes through. We had, you know, the loving support of the family. We had the loving support of the community. But then the psychological aspect of how does one deal with the grief that's coming up? How do you, you know, we didn't know how to make a safe place for us to be able to talk about it. So, you know, I was talking first tense because I can't, you know, speak for my brothers and sisters and how they dealt with it. But I remember times wanting to reach out to talk about it, but it would bring these tornadoes of emotions up that were overwhelming. So we didn't know how to really handle it. I didn't know how to handle it, and so I would try to, like, make it go away. And many times I walked around feeling like the Tin Man from walking around with this shell. Life goes on, but how can life go on when such a, you know, rip? I had a broken heart. I lost my father. But it, at the same time, I had to determine to find a way to be happy. And so my life has been through that journey and finding and discovering ways of healing.
Sounds like you're very extremely close with your father.
And
so you, like, grew up just very, basically a very, you know, very in a religious environment, close-knit family, and then bang, all of a sudden, you know, it's like, the deck of cards are thrown all over the place,
yeah.
And how to deal with that and how to face that. And then you had all these emotions dealing with it, in particular. But now I understand, though, that, you know, this sounds pretty weird, but I understand, and I know you did a recent video of it, and I don't know, it's already been put out, that you speak. Yeah, and you've spoken with the individual who caused the accident, and he was, not to jump into your words, but I understand he was like, he was drunk at the time. It was not malicious. He just basically, you know, intoxicated and went through a stop sign or whatever and then hit the car that you and your family were in. And,
right.
Can you tell us a little bit how you dealt with it and when you dealt with that person who had the accident, because I'm sure that was pretty heavy.
Yeah, well, for many years, and in the beginning years, I hated him. You know, I felt he deserved to die. I felt no punishment would be great enough for him having caused what happened. And I didn't see, you know, a person on the other side. All I saw was, you know, this bad and this wrong that needed to be right, that could never be righted, you know. And as I grew and had more life experiences as a young adult, there were some things that, you know, in my life that I had done or experienced that maybe I had wished I had done different or, you know, had regrets about. So then I had to start, you know, looking at seeing how to improve my life or forgive myself for those things that I had wished I had done different. Because I saw, I'm like, wow, I can't really be mad at this person anymore because I'm really no different. I've done things that I, you know, not maybe as on large of a scale, but things that I had done against myself or, you know, while I was in the midst of my pain, trying to find a way, you know, for me to be like, quote unquote, normal again. But what is normal? But normal in the sense of having inner peace, right? So,
So you basically had a and this happened when your the accident happened when you're how old were you when you had the accident occur?
11 years old. It's taken me a long time because I swore at that time I would never ever forgive him, ever forgive him. He had done something to me that was never forgivable.
And that's pretty real common. I mean, if people look at, I mean, it's bad, you know, what happened with, obviously, within, like, 9-11, today being 9-11, and that was obviously dealt with purposely, and people have to deal with that out of revenge, mm-hmm. which is understandable, and then you had that feeling of revenge where here it was not even malicious, but it's still, you know, you're still angry because you feel a sense of, as a child, this person took away that something that was dear to you, and then you carry those feelings year after year after year after year, and then all those lifetimes you start dealing with, it affects you in the most subtle ways, maybe a friend, a lover, or whatever, mm-hmm. and in your own demeanor and of course, your lifetime. So,
well, the thing that I saw, if I may interject here real quick, that's a really important element to this.
No, you not. You may not.
Okay, then carry on, sir.
No, I was being sarcastic.
Yes, I know. What I've learned in the last year, what I've really saw is through all my, you know, studies and whatever, it's like, two things cannot occupy the same space at the same time. So as an 11, 12-year-old, I'm saying I will never forgive this man ever. On the other hand, I'm saying I have to find a way to be happy. Well, how can those two opposing things exist at the same time? They're polar opposites, right? But I didn't know as a young child. Although my mother led an example for us, she went down to the jailhouse and talked to the man, you know, in person. And, you know, from her faith base and religion, of course, you know, delivered the gospel according to her faith to him. And, you know, I just, at that time, I was not able to go. I was like, no, I don't want to ever talk to him. I don't want to ever see him, ever. But seeing that the quality of the life that this, hanging on to this bitterness, this resentment that was taken away, because you're right, it does affect me in other areas that I'm even on a subconscious level, even while over here I'm holding on to never forgiving this person, condemning him, and, you know, he deserves to die.
Because it sounds like it's basically you're holding on to, inner anger and dealing with anger, which obviously, you know, it's basically, in Hebrew they call it the ash of life, so it's the fire burning in you. But it's like, But I understand that you started doing, learning healings and coming in tune with your healing and your intuitive abilities. How would you be able to deal with that fact at the same time dealing with your loss of and anger with your father? Is it in course that may perhaps during the course of your learning to because I think that most people have the healing abilities, but they don't realize they have them until. And you start discovering your healing abilities, And then through that course, meeting at the same time your own anger issues at the same time, it's basically like self-healing while you're learning to heal.
Well, that's exactly right, and actually even more on a selfish basis, if I may say so, because I was really screwed up. I was on this discovery of how do I heal, and within sight of each of us is the capacity to heal. So all of my studies I did for myself, one, because I was so out of balance internally. I was looking for that sense of balance, and how do I obtain that? So I studied everything from all the different religions, Eastern, Western religions, all, you know, different segments, and I explored inside of the question, what is the truth? I didn't want to just believe something because I had been taught something by my parents who were taught by their parents who were taught by their parents. I wanted to explore the knowledge. There's so much knowledge in this universe. And there's everything that we know that we know. There's everything we know that we don't know. We can go study that, and then it'll just come into the category of what we know that we know. Then we can go to people that, you know, are the experts and know. So, but then there's this whole other area that we don't even know what we don't even know exists out there.
Well, I think we do know. It's just that we don't open it. We don't listen.
Consciously.
But we can consciously listen.
To the conscious mind.
Mm-hmm. We can. The universe is speaking to us. We just don't want to. We're too busy talking, yapping, which is real common amongst a lot of individuals. But that's a whole other show I've done so many times. But in fact, I think a couple of weeks ago. But what in your perspective, though, looking at how tragedy or death is. And coming to terms with it, how do you look at on a spiritual? What is your perspective on a tragedy as death? Because to me, it's more just we pick our. Actually, I believe that we pick. There's karmic events that are picked and dealt with, and then we come to terms of dealing with them. And it's actually opportunities for growth. Because if you didn't have these, what you can call think of being really tragedies, are things that are. Maybe deviations in your path or things that might seem, whether it's tragic or hard or a big, huge burden or living like like in the Bible of Job or whatever. But it's opportunities that if you didn't have those, you would just sort of float along. You wouldn't, it's like having a spiritual weightlifting, and you're living.
Yeah.
To grow from that. Otherwise, why would you be in embodiment? Is that how you perceive that, or?
There's several different perspectives that you know you can look at, and I love to take on different perspectives when looking at this. Say, for instance, one of the things that came to mind while you were speaking was like it's just like a gem going through the fire, the pressure, the heat. You know, it's our soul's evolvement. Like who I am today is. From all of these experiences, all the pain, the suffering that I've been through, and has formed me, like my heart, my passion, my life, like who I am. So, you know, it's just like a diamond that goes through our precious jewel that goes through this refining process that is unique and who I am today. I celebrate who I am today. Like, I really genuinely have gotten to a place, like this morning, it was so amazing. You know when you're like, you know you're waking up, but you're still asleep? I could feel in my heart just a gratitude just bubbling over to God, to the universe, whatever you want to call it, just to life, like, thank you for everything that's been accomplished and everything that will be accomplished and being in alignment with my authentic purpose in this world, that is just for so long, for so many years that I just desired and longed for, and just to be in this space. I'm just so filled with gratitude, and it was amazing to wake up and it's just present and being in that place.
That's pretty profound. That sounds so cool.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, I mean, people need to be thankful for what they are. I mean, I've seen for people I meet every day that look at things and they go, "Oh my God, I you know, my business, I'm bankrupt." I says, "Dude, you got a house over your head. You're not living, you know, go look at some people who are living, you know, like in cartons." You know, there's a old saying, and this is sort of like old, it's a Judaic thing, it's like whatever. But I remember a story, they said the reason why there are, in this world that we live in, there are people who are suffering, is so mm-hmm. those who are not in that situation can appreciate what they have. So when you mm-hmm. see somebody who is, you know, you think you're suffering, and then you see somebody who's living out in the street. Well, that person who's living out on the street now looks over at the next person who doesn't even have eyes and doesn't have a place to live. And then you look down,
right.
You know, you can keep on going down the line and seeing people
yeah.
who, and then there are people who have me.
Either way, either way. You can look down the line, you can look up the line, and there's always, you know, it's a scale. Like,
yeah, but you can, but yeah, but it's just a reminder of, you know, that how you should appreciate for what you do have. And
mm-hmm.
the biggest problem with people, look, I think they're, which is a whole other issue, like I said before, the way their perspective, their perspectives.
Perspective.
A lot of perspectives is when, first of all, like the universe is is infinite. And a lot of people, when they take all this information and they try to ascertain it, they try to perceive it and they're limiting themselves on their perception. And then when they try to explain it, they always hawk in metaphors because it's like, you bite an apple, I bite an apple, and we're both trying to describe what the apple tastes like. And so,
mm-hmm.
that you, by doing so, we're doing it in a metaphor. Well, the same thing happens in like an experience when something even tragic happens. Everybody has a different setting of it, and they'll even go into it with a different perspective. And that's like when people, you know, that's why people may be looking at the chair a different way, but they're seeing the same thing, but
uh-huh.
describing it differently. And so they'll say,
right.
it's my way or the highway, or you're
right.
wrong, I'm right, and then, you know, and it's dealing with that, and everybody's on different levels. So and this goes into course with dealing when somebody passes away, you're dealing with people who have been taught, you know, one form or another what happens when somebody dies or how you're supposed to deal with it. Because I, you know, for me, I know when my father passed away, and it was sort of sudden, actually, my mom did not want my daughter or my daughters at the time, both of my daughters, to go even to the funeral and keep them separate. And, you know, and it was hurtful for them. They really needed to
yeah.
go to it. And even to this day, my daughter freaks out even just going to a funeral. We
yeah.
had a very close friend of ours who, she was like my spiritual mom. She passed away in 95. And it was begrudgingly when she went to even to the funeral. I mean, it was hard for her because of what happened when my father passed away. Here, you know, she couldn't come to. It was hard to dealing with that type of situation.
Yes.
So, you know, but now this, you know, now I understand your outlook on that. But now, how do you utilize from your experiences and from your healing in that? How in your outlook, how do you propose and utilize that with others when you're helping them through their grief and their hurt feelings and maybe and their obvious perhaps their anger or et cetera?
Well, just starting out by one, acknowledging their perspective, their experience, and validating it that exactly where they are is the perfect place for them to be. And to deny any part of that experience is to shut off their perspective, their experience. So if you're feeling angry, allow yourself to be angry and to express it. It's not going to be there forever. It changes with time, you know, your perspective. And if you allow yourself to embrace your truth, it's your truth according to your perspective. It's not anybody else's truth. But to allow that space, and grief calls for the most compassionate from those who are supporting. And so what I've been doing is researching how does one be with someone who's grieving in a way that, because we want to support those who are grieving, we want to make it better, and sometimes we'll say things like, well, you know, maybe you should kind of be over it by now because, you know, it's been however long, a year, 2 years, 5 years, but everybody's process is unique. And by understanding or knowing how just to be with somebody in a way that's loving and supportive, and then having a proper environment, because sometimes maybe it's, you know, overwhelming for people. Like, that's one of the things that the foundation is reaching out to do, is having community outreach, educating the community when a tragedy strikes, hopefully even before, you know, it's just having the knowledge, and when something happens, how to be with somebody and provide that supportive environment. But when you have a grief support group and, you know, trained facilitators who are there to guide one through the process, and you're around other people going through similar experiences, being able to share your experience is very healing, because every time you're able to share your story, a piece of you, a piece of the story gets healed.
So how do you incorporate your guidance and healing and initiative then in doing it? Do you use I know, because one time I had spoken to you, and you use like what they call, like I usually call changing, like I was always, my one spiritual teacher, she used to say, you know, well, thoughts are things, but so you have to change their thought patterns, or change, she called it changing the tapes. And I noticed that you were telling me at one time how you're doing a process in the words, and I was like, wow, you're actually methodically doing it.
You're talking about a time in my life where I was at the end of wanting to live. I've been
I'm talking about when you're talking with an individual.
With
an individual, and you're changing their tapes. Okay, go ahead, sorry. I know. See, now I interrupted you, and you should have cut me off.
go right ahead. What were you
gonna say? I was being sarcastic. I said, now you should have cut me off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but go ahead. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so I know you're referring to, I shared with you about a time where I was had been on this treadmill on my mind. I don't agree with you when you say thoughts are things, like, because they're thoughts. They're in the thought world. They're not actually a physical object that you can pick up unless you think more thoughts that actually cause you to have actions, and then they become solid. Why? The more you think on something, the more, like, it's like a magnet. It becomes more solid and more solid, like, because then you start thinking, you start acting, you start doing and building around that thought that then becomes a solid thing. But at first, it's this in this non-physical world. So I just, from my experience, what I share with people, and I share different tools and techniques that I've used along my path, and some may not be right for some people, and somebody will resonate with another one. So there, if I may, the time where, you know, I was so, like, had this thought that I wanted to just to kill myself. I wanted to life to end because I was so miserable. But I would go down this treadmill and this thought pattern. It was like I would always come back to the same place. Well, you're not going to do it, because I would see my family and I would see the pain that they would have at my funeral on top of my father's death, and I couldn't do it to them. But then I'd be like, well, I can't live like this. I'm so miserable. How can I live a life? If I'm going to live a life, I have to find a way to be happy, which is what my 12-year-old self said to myself. I have to find a way to be happy. Well, if I have to find a way to be happy, I have to always be unhappy, so I always have to find a way. So this was about, like, when I was 30 then. I'm like, okay, the only thing I can see is I have to choose to be happy. Well, how do I choose it? Every single moment, every single day, I had to stand like a centurion or a guard, and I literally did that in my mind, where I would see the thoughts going negative in my head. I'm like, no, stop it. I would go splash cold water on my face. I'd slap myself in my face in the mirror. I'd go exercise. I would do something. I would find something to appreciate. And so, you know, it was really hard and challenging at first, but by being this literally like a guard, a centurion in my brain, not allowing it to go down certain paths, I was able to pull myself out of that, and over time, becoming stronger and stronger and focusing on that and really looking at, in my life, what am I holding against myself? You know, why the, and, you know, guilt or shame or, you know, and really because it, life starts from the inside. It works from the inside out. What we have, what we do has nothing, yeah.
But Mary, see, you're re-emphasizing, actually, what you're talking about really is what I was saying to you, is thoughts are things. In fact, that's actually a quantum physics fact.
Uh-huh.
Like, when you're changing tapes, they already now, it's like a full circle on the esoterics.
Uh-huh.
Like, when you're thinking something in your amp, like, because I was amazed at why you're utilizing certain thoughts, you're actually changing, the thoughts have wavelengths, actually. They already know
yes.
this now. So the wavelengths actually both on the spiritual level, but they also affect physical level in your matrix, in your physical form, in your DNA. In fact, your
mm-hmm.
DNA actually expands from love and all that stuff,
which are
communicators, and it starts stimulating other chemicals throughout your body and et cetera.
Yeah.
So when you are changing some of these tapes and the thought patterns, this happens like with people who are, you know, who are depressed or they get addictive to being depressed or addictive to whatever thought processes because it creates a formula. And what I was referring to when thoughts are things is there, in fact, they now know there is a measure of energy. They now know that is, in fact, everybody has 95% space, or not, I forget, 90-something space within your atoms, within the atom itself.
Yeah.
And now they're discovering that's where that thoughts are being carried at. So it just amazed me how that what you're doing, the process of how you're doing this, you're changing the tapes, and you correspond and the same methodology in a very unique way is being utilized for the person who is both grieved and dealing with their sense of loss. So it seems to me you've taken from what you've learned personally through your course of life of up to there, which I think everything has a reason for happening in a way. And so you think as bad as the tragedy was, but now look at you, here you are, and which we're going to get into right now. Now it's called throwing a little pebble in the pool and all these waves are going for us. Now you've mm-hmm. thrown the pebble in and now you've out of that created a foundation, which is helping, you know, thousands upon thousands of individuals, which, by the way, then helps others down the line. It's like a wave that keeps on carrying. And, and of course your organization, the foundation is called ACY, and can you tell me first tell me what ACY stands for those, I know it is, but tell the audience what that stands for and how it came about.
Yes. My father's name is Arnold Cephas Yoder, ACY. The full name of the foundation is the Arnold C. Yoder Survivors Foundation, but it's quite a mouthful. So I call it literally the ACY, THEACY, and that's the website, theacy.org. And I use it as an acronym to help, encourage, and cheer youth. So it's a really easy way to remember it. So it's the Arnold C. Yoder Survivors Foundation. And I always knew that I would do something in honor of my father. I didn't know what. And I always knew that all of this struggle that I went through had to be for something. Something good had to come out of it. And that's what the foundation is.
And when did your foundation come into existence?
Well, I formed the foundation back in 2005. Is when I did this, you know, legal paperwork and the structures and all that. And I then went into this space of like, who do I think I am? I don't know anything about building a charity. I've always been very independent and, you know, owned my own businesses, but I've never built a charity organization. So it was then just in the last year that I have had 80, 90, 100% of my time now focused fully on the foundation, along with Dennis Hargrove and Nigel Couchet, some of my closest and near dearest friends and people in this who have support the foundation, and it's been a community building really strongly in the last years. We've had many successes in the last year. We've become now tax-exempt status, and we're going to be working with USC over the next semester. The ACY is going to college. We've been approached by USC to work with the students. They have an organization that they founded. It's the LACI, and it's a charitable organization that the students formed that helps other businesses, whether charity or for-profit, to get together, like the strategic plans, marketing plans, business plans, and all of that. So we're going to be working with them over the next fall semester.
Wow, that's unreal. That's fantastic. I hope it doesn't piss off the Bruins fans out here in L.A., but...
The
Bruins fans, you know, UCLA fans here. Because you're working with USC, but that's fine.
that
sounds phenomenal. I mean, you guys are, and what do you, like other, how do, specific, how do you, what, how does your foundation function? How do you help people?
Well, that's what I've been researching about, you know, when I founded the organization, all I knew is that I wanted to bridge the gap of time when a tragedy strikes to the place where I am today. Like, I'm happy, I'm peaceful, and I'm passionate, I'm involved in life again. So how do you shorten that gap of time? For me, it's 28 years. So through the National Alliance for Grieving Children, we're one of their newest members. The membership is comprised up of organizations that are nationwide. There's over 300 grief support centers now that are nationwide, and the first grief support center started in 86, the Dougie Center. And they have a proven success model for peer support group, art therapy, education. So they are mentoring me. We're going through the training. Some of our facilitators, we're looking for grief support facilitators. So if anybody's listening, you feel you would like to come and volunteer and actually go through the training, we need people, because we need two facilitators per 8 children. Now the model is such that the groups are very death specific. To somebody who's grieving from a death that's all of a sudden, to a death that you know is coming, you grieve differently. And then also like a violent death, like a murder or a murder-suicide, is a different type of grief than if you know the death's coming, like a long-term illness. And then it's going to be age-specific as well. So a 3 to 5-year-old will grieve differently than like a 6 to 10 or even a teenager. So they need to be in their own peer support group.
Right, their own individual,
yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Their own unique situation. And then having peers so they can each have a common, feel the comfort of what the other one has gone through.
Exactly.
So you have peer support, and then you have guidance, and then you have art therapy and you know, education and stuff.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, we refer out. We're not psychologists. We refer out. If somebody needs more one-on-one attention, we do refer out to someone that needs more specialized attention. And the great thing about this peer support model is that, so I'm working with these centers that have been in existence for 15, 20, 25 years, and people can stay in the groups as long as they want. The average stay is 10 months. 10 months. And that was like the answer, that's what I was like, okay, how do we facilitate through? How do we process through? And you don't ever get over losing a loved one. You love the person who has come and gone and shared their life. But the truth is, you know, death is a part of life. We're all going to die one day. It's just a matter of time, when, and how. And so that we can be with death as a part of life, it's like the light, the dark, the yin, the yang, you know, and by opening up to it and just accepting it, then we can provide a place to be for those who are living still. You know, we have our life to live and move forward.
What's the AC's vision and mission right now?
Our vision and our mission right now, we're having our first fundraiser September 23rd. And that's a 28-year anniversary for me and my family. It was 28 years ago that we were hit by the driver, the guy who hit us. And it's on a Wednesday evening. Exactly, 28 years. And, you know, it's pretty amazing. I'm that here 28 years later, who would have thought I would be doing this and building this foundation? And it's not just me alone, but I want to thank everybody who has supported me even through the darkest night of my soul, like being there for me and loving me. Like, you helped me be who I am today, and I thank you for that, and I love you. So, but back to your question of what the vision is right now is, one, raising the funds so we can actually open our first center here in Los Angeles and build and raise awareness. And we're not stopping. We're not going anywhere. I have a national vision, like support around the world. You know, Facebook is a wonderful tool. It's connected me with so many people all around the world. There's a gentleman in Africa who's emailing me saying, we need a center here in Africa. You know, how do
everybody, you know, it's a worldwide, you know, situation in every different course. I mean, you know, people, there's no ethnicity or color boundary or religious. Everybody's the same scenario.
Yes.
And can you tell me what's so unique for the AC Foundation compared to other organizations?
Yes. The core thing is, one, there's the grief support for children, but then there's the other aspect that I've come to learn in my life, that forgiveness. And for so long I thought forgiveness was, oh, in my self-righteousness, I forgive you for taking the life of my father. But no, it takes place within inside of myself. Forgiveness is something that I do for myself because I am committed to the quality of life that I really desire for myself and for my loved ones and for my family. Like, letting go of any anger, bitterness, and it starts with me towards myself. Once I was able to do that, then I looked around and I saw people I've hurt in my life, and I could go to them and say, hey, you know, when I was in this darkness, I perhaps have hurt you. And then I seek forgiveness, and then which led me to the greatest phone call that ever I never thought I would ever make, and that was to Kohler and asking him and talking to him and saying, you know what, I actually care about you after all these years, because you've been with me every day and I've thought about you in different ways. I'll be granted, I'll be honest
with you.
And
Kohler, so those people didn't understand that Kohler was the person who hit, you know, the guy who caused the accident.
Yeah, and because, you know, I can see him now being a human being on the other side of it. He's suffered, and he's suffered so much, and he's pounded himself into the ground more than anybody else in the world. I mean, I don't know about you, but, like, I've lived with hold on one second, please.
Wow.
Hello? Sorry.
Yeah.
I've lived on that a state of guilt or being bad or wrong because, you know, the way my family taught me to live or whatever, I've broken all the rules that they have taught me, you know, to do or not to do. And so, you know, I had to come to terms with that guilt. So, like, really taking an inventory of life, of one's life. And I speak in my first tense, but I'm really speaking to you, to those who can relate to me, when I speak that I have to take an inventory of my life and see anywhere where I am out of alignment with my authenticity, with my truth. And nobody can tell my truth for me other than myself. Not my parents. You know, of course, growing up, they guide you. But mm-hmm. as an adult, you know, not my siblings, not my, you know, sister-in-laws. Nobody, not you, can tell me what my truth is for me. Only when I lay my head down on my pillow at night, am I in alignment? And do I have peace? And it starts there, and then finding, okay, why don't I have peace in this area, and find where I'm out of alignment with my truth, and then making it right. And it's really about needing integrity with myself And then, you know, and living from that space. And if we can all just take care of ourselves in that way, and then relate and respect ourselves in that way, and then it, and then it's like a ripple effect. When you drop a pebble in this, you know, in the lake, it just ripples out.
Yeah,
and then it goes out
everybody.
Into our,
yeah, like
our immediate family, our community, and out into the greater world.
Yeah,
and so that.
Well, people don't realize how we're all actually so deeply connected, even indirectly, without even just, you know, even like I said to you before about thoughts and stuff, they actually do have rippling effects. They've even shown how just emotional energies around people affect. If there's a lot of angry people, there's a lot of anger issues start bringing up. If there's happy and loving thoughts,
yeah.
And that'll transcend actually through other areas too.
But, yeah.
And it's unique. I love how, because you're actually having a dual process through healing. It's not just, it's actually coming to terms with the self-love and self-worthiness for the person. Getting, it's basically, in esoteric terms, it's like raising their vibration, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
And you know, there's like, I mean, it's like Buddha says, there's no way to happiness. Happiness is the way. Which is like what you said in the very beginning. I just feel so overjoyed, you know. And each day, you feel gratitude. That's what that's all about. You're not chasing, you know, the fancy car, be a rock star. Sounds like a song, but or you know. And it really is, because I know people chase things. They're running worried about their
mm-hmm.
their and when you see death, it comes to a reality that that's all.
Yeah.
I remember my spiritual mother, the day before she passed away, which was a whole weird trip. First of the thing she kept on saying, the most important thing, all you can think is the most only thing that's important on this realm called Earth, in this plane, is love. All the
uh-huh.
other is pure bullshit, you know, pure
yeah.
BS. See, I can say bullshit on this because I won't get fined by the FCC.
It's in internet
God.
Radio, you can say
yeah.
anything.
Yeah, actually, I did get in trouble. I was on an interview in Canada, and they kept going, wait a minute, I can't see his bullshit. But that's bullshit. And the guy's going, huh? But I can't believe that that's bullshit. And you can't say that, but that is bullshit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so...
May I say something?
You may.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, because you said something, you know, like, well, I have been at that point, you know, where during my lost years, I looked outside of myself for gratification, whether, you know, the car or the clothes or anything that I had. And that's our society is so outward based. We forget like who our true value is the internal base. But so I've learned that that's where my true value comes from, is my internal, my unseen, my soul. You know, that's my true value. Nobody can walk the way I do. Nobody talks the way I do. Nobody sees the world I do. And I bring to the world a certain perspective, just like you do, just like all the listeners here do. We're so unique. We're like a snowflake, you know, our fingerprints are all unique. We're very similar in many ways, but very unique in many ways, too. So, like, really celebrating your uniqueness.
So Mary, because we're almost coming down to the end, and I definitely want you, I'd love to have you again on my show, but I do want you to, I know you previously mentioned about a fundraiser and whatnot, that's happening, I guess, on September 23rd here in Los Angeles. Could you tell people, folks, how and where and what and how they can get in touch with you, or how they can be part of that, get involved in the event, and if they cannot get involved in the event, how they can become a volunteer or help or donate or just get in touch
sure.
with you or whatever? Could you tell my
yes.
audience how they, or the listeners, how they can get in touch
absolutely.
With you? Or
absolutely. Absolutely. And you were looking with, our doors are open, our hearts are open for those who are in alignment with our vision as your vision and mission. Like, the foundation is a community-based, and it belongs to the public. So we're looking for committed, passionate people. And you can go to our website, which is www.theacy.org. Make sure you put the T-H-E in there. ACY, it's To Help, Encourage, and Cheer Youth is the acronym for it, .org. Our phone number is 310-684-3964, and about the event specifically, you can go to Reg Online, like register, RegOnline, REGOnline.com /the ACY. And you have it posted up on your website too, right? You have all that information. They can go and get there too.
Which are the email addresses they can contact you if they can't get to that, but they want to still get involved with, because I've gotten a lot of people contacting me, and I've just been forwarding your email addresses, but can you tell the audience out there, especially overseas, because they're going to be listening to this on a lot of people on tape on archives.
Well, hello, international listeners. I have an international heart. So the email address, plain and simple, is info@theacy.org, or there's volunteer@theacy.org. But it all comes into the headquarters here in Los Angeles, and any ideas, inspirations that you may have, any thoughts you'd like to share, we'd love to hear you and love to share with you this experience that we're having. And, you know, it's just amazing to watch it all grow and come together.
Well, Mary, I have to thank you once again, man. That was this has been very, very deep and very, very enlightening interview. And I hope it helps any of those out there who, in fact, probably everybody who's been out there, because everybody's affected in dealing with such matters. And it's sort of like a tribute, I believe, the show, just by having you on this show for remembrance, because the tragedy that happened on 9/11 and those who are not necessarily just died, but those who directly but indirectly in the course of trying to do the rescues have died due to the rescues and whatnot. So I want to thank you, Mary, for coming on my show. And once again, everybody, do contact her and try to come to the event. And if you can't, at least give her a holler, or either through email, volunteer information, and just be the little another pebble throwing that into the pond and continue the rippling effect. And with that, I am going to close with Shooting Stars with Ruby Freeman Orchestra. And I want to thank you all once again. God bless you all. And have a truly blessed weekend. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Take care. Au revoir.
Au revoir.